This episode of We Are Libertarians is brought to you by Audible.com. Enjoy one free audiobook courtesy of We Are Libertarians. Choose from more than 100,000 audiobook titles, including works by Ron Paul, Walter Block, Murray Rothbard, and the Cato Institute. Audible.com also has audio of radio and TV programs and audio versions of magazines and newspapers. You can get the Audible app on any mobile device or download the audio to your computer. Go to audibletrial.com/WAL or head to WeAreLibertarians.com and find the link to get one free month of Audible today. Welcome to We Are Libertarians for this week. I am Chris Spangle. Over there on the other couch is Greg Lenz. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Chris. How are you?
And with us is Harry Price again. How are you, Harry?
I'm going great. How are you doing?
Oh, I can't complain. I'm going to try, though. That's what this is all about, right?
Yeah, libertarians complaining into a microphone.
This is what we... What was the meme that we posted on the Facebook page the other day that made me...
Libertarians are like Greek gods. Was it that one?
Yes, they are. They do nothing but fight amongst themselves and nobody believes in them.
Yep, no one believes in them.
Oh, that was a good one. Ha-ha, comedy. Yep. So, Harry, thank you for bringing offerings, by the way. Harry... as we all know, I am trying to lose weight. I'm on a diet. And Harry apparently did not get the memo.
Because no, I'm sorry, I don't.
He walked up into my crib and said, walked up into my house and said, hey, you want some Reese's peanut butter pumpkins? I said, sure, yeah.
Would you like some diabetes?
I said, oh, no, I'm okay, actually. He's like, I'll just go grab one. It'll be all right. Comes in. This is a box. It is 36 one-ounce packages. This is 2 pounds of Reese cups.
How much did that cost?
It fell off the back of a truck. Oh,
I mean, this is like Sam's Club candy. Where'd you get this?
It fell off the back of a truck, and let's leave it like that. What? It fell off the back of a truck. It looks pretty good off the back of a truck.
Did you bring hot items into my house?
It fell off the back of a truck.
Is this hot?
It fell off the back of a truck.
Oh,
I work by trucks. Stuff getting, fall off once in a while.
Greg, I'm getting quite the thrill. This is like a crime.
Hot candy. Listen to the rapper. That's what the listeners tune in for.
Yeah, good rap.
There we go. It's ready to go.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cup opening unboxing.
All right, I'm going to make sure that these are...
Like the Halloween candy.
Delicious.
Does it taste better because it's stolen?
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Falling off the back of a truck.
Because it was discovered?
It's
exactly. Founders keepers.
Mm-hmm.
It's got high fructose corn syrup. It's got peanut butter and danger.
Remember when you were lecturing us earlier this week in chat about how you're on an all-organic diet?
I am. Mm-hmm.
None of that sounds organic.
No. This is not organic. This is not free trade. Chocolate. This peanut butter is not organic, but it is delicious.
I feel like some Chinese kids were crunching peanuts in a back room sweatshop just so you could enjoy your discovered Reese's pumpkins.
I don't know. I'm sure if it's peanut butter, but yeah.
Harry, well, it's going to be tough to do a podcast now that I've got peanut butter in my mouth. I feel like Mr. Ed. You're going to have to talk or something, Greg. This is a bad idea.
Oh, are you going to go for a second?
Of course.
All right. There we go.
I've got 36 to get through.
We should bring these one next time Maya comes on. Here, eat some more.
Your enthusiasm is incredible over there.
Maya's not happy.
I know. We have been talking a lot about cops and violence and retaliation against the police state. And mm-hmm. I feel like Maya is the preeminent expert on such things, given she's, what, chairman of the local cop block chapter?
Minneapolis cop block and a professor of the police state.
Of the police state.
Yeah, her official title.
She gave herself a title.
And instead, she's not here.
Nope.
And wasn't here on the last one.
Here's what Maya writes on my Facebook wall. Do you have a podcast which talks about the police state and does not invite the resident police state professor to said podcast? That's a weak my impression. It needs more shrillness.
More shrillness.
More anger. More violence.
Cis hate.
Yeah.
Cis hate. And pink hair.
So, actually, I'm trying to talk Maya and Harry into doing the next Weird Libertarians, sans Greg and I, and talk about Gamergate, which I have no idea what that is, but maybe somebody in our audience knows and would be interested. And then on top of that, get Maya's opinion on Ferguson and the police state.
I'm sure it'll be very, very, reasonable. Shelby well balanced in the issues of balancing the police state and the rule of law and citizens' rights.
I don't know what Maya is going to say, but let me just say this right now, okay? Maya is my friend, and she scares me a little bit. So when she wants to do a podcast, I let her do a podcast. But that does not mean that I agree with anything she's going to say. I'm doing it because I'm scared. Okay? So if you listen to the next podcast, that does not represent my views or Greg's views or probably Harry's views. And Maya can do that one by herself. Then our voices aren't on that. I'd be like, she just stole the equipment. I don't
a non-consensual podcast, right. If you will.
She's raping my RSS feed.
Yes, she is.
Oh, I'm sorry. We shouldn't make rape jokes.
No, that's insensitive, Chris.
Trigger warning.
Yeah, that's Bill Cosby's job. Could there be a bigger scumbag on the planet than Bill Cosby? Other than, like, maybe whoever the new Saddam Hussein is, Coney? Maybe
yeah,
Coney?
Just... Yeah. Joseph Coney.
Joseph Coney, maybe?
Another black person. Nice. Good job.
Oh, God.
Newt Gingrich.
Hey,
okay, yeah.
I can say those sorts of
Gingrich.
Things. We're friends, Harry.
Yeah.
You're my racism insurance. What was that video that I posted?
Oh, Joe. Joe sent it and put it in chat. And what it is it's a comedy troupe that's coming into town soon, and they released a bit called Racism Insurance.
Oh, and you got to see it.
It was basically like the State Farm commercial, or where is it? Which insurance company is
it?
Yeah,
State Farm.
Yeah, you could like call the fairy of insurance, and it was his racism insurance when he was being offensive to about every African American black person he met.
It is Dear White People is the Facebook page. Here.
Dear white people.
Dear white people.
Dude, but you don't act black.
What?
What I mean is, like, you don't act all, like thugged out.
So all black people are thugged out?
Man. Oops, I was racist. Black guy, come here.
How can I help you?
I was trying to bond with my black coworker, but things got racist real fast.
Hey, man, he's all right. He's a really good guy. What he meant to say was that he finds it extremely refreshing that you managed to somehow defy racial stereotypes, remain your own person, rooted but not bound to the black experience, which is culturally astonishing for him because he comes from Milwaukee and his father's a redneck.
He said all that.
He's cool, man. He ain't got a Monty house all the time, man. Eat place.
Lover. It's good food.
Good guy.
And then there's a payoff at the end that's just priceless.
Oh, it's great.
Another piece of comedy that I thought was just hysterical was SNL last night. We're recording this on Sunday the 7th, December 7th?
Yeah, 7th.
This is a podcast that nobody will ever forget. It's one that will live in infamy, and not because Harry's here. Yeah. So Al Sharpton was on SNL. It was the cold open. And here, let me play a little bit from it from last night. It was hysterical.
Was Dubois. Excuse me, dubious. Now all over the country, there are protests. And for the first time in my life, everyone agrees with me. Folks are high-fiving with me, inviting me places. This must be what it feels like to be Beyoncé. What the hell is going on? Last night, I was sitting in front of my TV, and I found myself saying, you damn right, Bill O'Reilly. I'm all messed up.
So very funny. Very funny indeed. So Kenan Thompson. Mm-hmm. And then the Jay Farrow, who I think could be, he has Eddie Murphy caliber to him. I think once he finally got a breaks for you from SNL, when he can finally get on a sketch, they're finally writing for him a little bit. I mean, he's brilliant, and they never write for him, so.
I feel like he needs to find that, he probably hasn't developed a relationship with that writer that'll take him to the next level. You know, that seems to be like everyone, you know, all the, when they break off and do the movies, there's always that writer that breaks with them that actually, you know, develops the character.
His Obama is just light years ahead of Fred Armisen.
Oh.
So good.
Part of me, though, laughs just looking at Fred Armisen pretending he's Obama. Like, that's just funny.
Even Fred Armisen, I heard in an interview, he's like, it's ridiculous that I'm Barack Obama. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It never should have happened. That's my Fred Armisen impression.
You were killing it with the impressions today.
Thank you. Yeah.
Can you do a Cosby? Oh, God, no!
You! I like the pudding with my thing where it don't belong.
Oh, could we watch where your hands go when you do that?
Oh, I do have my hand underneath my... I'm touching my... While I was doing the Bill Cosby impression...
You went full Cosby, my friend.
when I was doing that impression, I started scratching my behind, and I shoved my hand way behind. That didn't make everybody uncomfortable.
Well... This is starting well.
So, yeah, well, this has gone well,
mm-hmm.
as usual. So, next episode, hopefully, Maya and Harry will do an episode for us, and we disavow it. I shouldn't even publish it, but Maya has an interesting point of view that even though we don't agree, here's what we do here, we libertarians, if you're new to what we do here. We don't all agree with each other, and we all don't presume that we know everything, except for Maya and Creighton, who you'll hear soon enough.
Who would make an excellent podcast.
Yes.
Would it ever be possible to get it to happen is another thing. But
has it never happened?
No, they've but I mean just the two of them.
Oh, no.
Researched up, ready to go away.
Yeah. Never going to happen.
Pick a topic and just let them go.
So
gender roles.
Mm, yes.
So herein, just to kind of refresh you about what We Are Libertarians is, we are a group of about half a dozen to a dozen at any given time. Hoosier millennials, we're all libertarians, but we're different types of libertarians. You know, Harry is more of that arch conservative, I would say.
Not any longer. He's not anymore.
More of an anarcho-capitalist now.
Or? I went to Porkfest, and I kind of just swinged straight over.
Okay. Yeah, Greg was a scumbag Republican who now is, like, quoting Rothbard all the time. I mean, he's fallen off the... Like, to the point
I'm a crypto-fascist libertarian.
He's now making, like, anti-cop memes. That's how far he's come the last... you know, there's that point where every libertarian, like, they start becoming libertarians because of economic issues if they're former Republicans. So they're kind of like... you know, I'm going to become a libertarian because I'm down with the economic side of it. It just makes total sense. But that whole, like, police state, anti-war, I just don't know if I can buy into all that. And then all of a sudden they're on a podcast and...
I see one dog get shot. I'm issuing a fatwa against all cops.
Yep.
I've had to say to Greg, like, you sound like Maya.
Oh, I was livid on, like, that one meme I had made of... Palanteo, the officer, right. Where I put a pig's nose on him,
yeah,
and then wrote that sign, and I felt a little bit bad after I read it because it was written in an angry moment, but I was like, you know what? He does love Ed Hardy t-shirts and Nickelback. He's totally that guy.
So,
didn't know he knew.
Creighton,
like Nickelback. Oh, man.
Oh,
a whole nother level of hate.
Creighton has been over the last year and a half, at YAL working for YAL. He's definitely more of your Rand Paul supporting Republican libertarian. Then there's Gina, who almost came tonight. We almost got Gina back. Who's more of that left leaning libertarian, still kind of coming into it from the left and doesn't really know. You know, she knows all the Democratic talking points, but she's kind of coming at it from the opposite way that Greg did. I'm somewhere in the middle. I'm pragmatic. At this point, I'm a little more like, I just don't care as much. But definitely become more and more anarchist. And then there's Maya, our resident libertarian flamethrower. She is the extreme. And I would say Maya is probably the one who pushes all of us. You know, the little group of friends that we've developed that circle around this podcast, you know, who she's like that stone that you sharpen your knife against. You know, you've got to try and refute her, and if you can't, you just relent at a certain point. So even though we don't agree with what Maya's going to say, even though we have a pretty good idea, we do feel like it is good for people to hear different opinions. Even opinions that we may not necessarily like, because it helps us learn, it helps us kind of see it from a different view.
I know for me, Maya's sort of like my philosophical anchor. Now, we're going to disagree greatly on tactics, but I'm never going to get to the same place as her on tactics. But
right.
She's always the one that, when I always think of what she would say whenever I'm considering an issue. She's sort of that... she's sort of that baseline or, you know, benchmark for me.
Right.
Okay.
From a philosophical standpoint.
And she does it in such a way that makes you hate her that it's entertaining. So
I've said it better before. She has all the social grace of an Israeli Counter-Strike. And I stand by that.
Yes. We don't call her social terrorist supreme around here for no reason.
She walks wherever she goes, it ends up looking like Hamas.
Just about, yeah.
No, truthfully, Maya is one of the best friends anybody can ever have, even if she will occasionally punch you in the knee and hurt you and then never talk to you again. But
the only nap she'll violate.
The only she will not violate her own nap, wake up and hang out with you, will she, Harry?
No, she will not.
They're having a Harry and Maya, would you say that you two are best friends? You two are becoming best friends.
Friendship is magic. So yeah, we've been hanging out a whole bunch actually the last
year or so.
And, oh,
and
wow.
She keeps ditching you. She keeps falling asleep.
I know. She pushes me all the way here to the anarchy side, and then she starts ditching me.
New project time.
Yep.
So that's a little bit about our favorite topic, us, and why, because we occasionally will get the email like, I love you guys. We've gone back and listened to every episode. We're big fans, but we hate Maya. We hate why you even have her on the show. It's like, that's why, because Maya, you know, pushes everybody and makes you think outside of the box. And frankly, a lot of us just want to hear points that will make us go, yeah, I agree with that. That's the talking point I can use. We want to hear the choir sing. We don't necessarily want to go out and do evangelism.
Well, the thing is, like, Maya also, like, speaks a lot of future talk. You know, like, she was hating cops before it was cool to hate cops. Mm-hmm. Speak of getting his cops, she was already hating them.
Did you just call Maya a hipster anarchist?
Oh
yeah. She's got,
wow,
like, a hipster anarchist.
I feel like, you know, I would have cleared that before.
Nope.
Before saying it publicly.
Nope. Let that out.
Oh man, increase your security. Call ADP.
That's okay. I've got the BSSID of her cell phone, so if she gets close to my house, it just, like, my I've got a computer, it'll tell me she's close.
Basically, you have an ankle bracelet on Maya for your own protection.
Yeah, I'm only screwed if she doesn't have her cell phone on it. Then I'm like, oh, crap.
All right, here are a couple letters people write on our Facebook page, and then we'd like to occasionally read your letters. So if you ever have a question for us, if you want to hear a topic suggestion that you, or just, you know, I don't know. We've asked people, since we went on a long hiatus this year due to my various personal catastrophes.
Improvements.
Like getting up early or getting divorced. Yeah, definite improvements. We've asked people, if you're going back and listening to the whole catalog, you can start at one and go forth. Our good buddy Ryan Connor, our only Twitter friend, the only person who tweets back at us ever, writes, after going through all the backlog since you asked, a few notes. Spangle is less gung-ho about the LP. Number two, Lens has come for... Ryan, get a refund from college. What are you doing in this letter here? Lens has come for philosophically to libertarianism, even if he is still a pragmatic incrementalist. So you have come far philosophically to libertarianism from whatever bastard child you were before, is what Ryan was saying.
I'd like to call it neo-chainism.
Yes. Mm. Number three, Ryan writes, Maya hates Greg. It's true.
I'm a very hateable person.
Number four, after seeing Creighton in person, I have no idea why Galt thought it would be a good idea to try and hit him.
That's very true.
That is very true.
Yeah.
Creighton works out, and back, and I think it was like episode 29-ish, I think it's labeled The Fight. After that episode, Galt swung at Creighton, and that effectively ended the trio of the first like 30 episodes of me, Creighton, and Galt. And then Galt eventually stopped coming in. We're going to try and catch up with him. But yeah, Maya, I don't think Maya hates anybody. Maya hates everybody, but she doesn't like hate. I've never really heard her like, I don't know. She just goes, whatever, you're not worth my time anymore. Not necessarily, mm-hmm, I will destroy you. And yes, I am less gung-ho about the LP. I would say that having worked for the LP for 4 years, living, eating, breathing it, I think when you are that involved in something, you kind of naturally just need a little bit of a break. And I'm definitely in that season right now with politics and not libertarianism or politics or any of my beliefs necessarily, just about how gung-ho I am about being politically active, you know, because I was so politically active for 10 years. I would say I'm more fired up and more philosophically closer to anarchy than I was a year ago. And that a lot of that has to do is because I've just kind of gone, I don't care about being politically pragmatic because I don't care about being political. You know, and so when you kind of don't care about winning over voters, you can just say, well, this is what I actually believe. And libertarians, the big L's, don't have that. They have to win votes. So most, I would say 98% of what I've ever said about Libertarian Party politics or libertarianism on past episodes and politically, like, I still believe that. I still believe that the Libertarian Party is the best vehicle, that we need a third party. It makes perfect sense, but I definitely am less gung-ho because I'm just at a point in life where I don't think that most of our society can, or any of our society at this point, can be fixed by government. You know, most of our problems are spiritual issues, they're issues of the heart, they're issues of economics, they're issues of the government being too involved, they're issues of us not seeing others as human beings and being too barbaric. Mm-hmm. You know, the government can't teach you to see another human being as an actual human being and not just another statistic, for instance. It goes the opposite way. Yep. It encourages that worldview that Eric Garner isn't a man, that a cop is good because he's part of the state and the state is good, and so therefore you need to default to the position that the cop was right and the black criminal was bad. Right. You know, when really our first default as human beings should be like, wow, somebody got killed? That's horrible. What happened?
Exactly.
You know, as opposed to, well, the state's right, so prove that the fact that this guy did...
Right, the state's right, and oh, some guy died. Well, that's 0.04% of incidents that happened that day.
Well, if he wasn't doing anything wrong, he wouldn't have been killed.
Yeah, if he hadn't argued with the cop, it's like, yeah, okay. Well, guess what? We're all one bad traffic stop where a cop who forgot his coffee that day from being in Eric Garner's position.
And Lord knows Italian inner city cops don't have hotheads or anything like that.
So I definitely look at that and I just kind of feel, I don't feel hopeless. I don't feel like the Libertarian Party is a waste of time because I see the value in it. I just sort of look at it and go, all right, my effort can best be done by doing this, by getting together with friends and putting out a podcast that people seem to miss when it's not there, that we enjoy doing. We don't necessarily think, like, what would the listeners like to hear? I mean, that's sort of coming from a radio background. I do that, but, you know, I definitely produce this show, but we don't sit down and, like, prep necessarily, you know? It's...
They run focus groups of topics.
Right. We just sort of go, all right, what are we interested in?
Because now I'm pissed off. What are we going to record about?
Exactly right. It's more our catharsis and then having people listen into our catharsis. And that seems to be about all I can handle at the moment in my life. So that's sort of... So I'm not... I have had a few people say, like, have you fallen out of love with the LP? And no, not at all. I voted for libertarians. I'm just not as active. That may and probably will change at some point down the road. I donate monthly to my local Libertarian Party, not to the National Party because they're a disaster. Travis Weick, whichever, writes, today is a new documentary. There is a new documentary called Rise Above the Mark. So check out Rise Above the Mark, as Travis suggested. I took many notes. My question to the folks at Wall is, what is education? I wonder if there isn't a fundamental disconnect about the answer to this question between parents and educators. Parents and legislators, between parents and non-parent Hoosiers, between non-parents and legislators and educators. So what is education? Let's give Travis his money's worth and give him like some quick answers on what we believe education to be. Greg?
For me, it's a process of self-discovery. I think too often education in our system is thought of as programming, essentially putting in a piece of software into a child. This is the framework and conceptual framework with how they analyze issues, how they think about things, what's the proper way to think about things. And I think I've always been like a fan of, you know, the ancient Greeks, so Socrates, Plato, the Academy. And that was much more a process of self-discovery and self-knowledge. And I think that's really the only way you can ever learn and feel comfortable with how you've arrived at your conclusions. Otherwise, you're basically just a parrot. You're repeating what you've been taught over the years. And so for parents, I get it. there's a system in place. You want your kid to be successful. You want them to grow up, have a job, you know, 2.5 kids, house, all that stuff. But at a certain point, you're doing your child a disservice if you preach adhering to authority, never challenging, never questioning, never arriving through critical thinking at your own conclusions. And until our system of education more resembles something along those lines, we do, to an extent, become kind of worker bees and supporters of the state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Harry?
That makes sense. Because to me, it's always been like the difference between education and learning, like educating someone or teaching someone how to learn for themselves. I've always was like, when I was going, I'm an IPS survivor. I went to IPS. Yay, IPS.
Indianapolis Public Schools, the largest school district in our state, mm-hmm. not well regarded as a institution of higher learning.
And that's where I went, where I was really taught how that the state was just basically there to, quote unquote, educate me. I was supposed to learn certain things to be able to, so they can get grants, so they can get money, and I get pushed into this box of be educated. It wasn't until I got to the part of high school when I learned that I could actually learn myself. That I actually, the stuff that I was learning on my own free time was educating or making, basically creating better paths for myself. I'm always interested in computers. That what really interested me, that and math. So all the other stuff that I did in school was just ways so I could get to more computers or to get to higher math classes. And the simple fact that since, you know, IPS didn't really push me through all of it, because I was bored mostly through high school,
right?
You know, so I see all kinds of kids like having that type of problem, because just like what Greg said, it's like I found out who I was. I'm a computer guy. I knew who I was, and the school was trying to push me out of that box. It was like, no, do this, go to college and do this. Like, no, I want to work on hard pieces of technology. This is what I want to work on.
Oh, absolutely. It's why swim against the grain. What mm-hmm. to what purpose? Like, is education about shoring up weaknesses, or should it be about improving strengths? That's something I never understood. Like, I get the idea of the well-rounded individual, but to an extent, I feel like once you love to learn, that's you're going to start learning about other subjects because you want to know, mm-hmm. as opposed to, gosh, I don't want to read that. I have to do this tonight. Why do I have to do this? I'm never going to do this.
Right. Yeah, and that stems out of the idea. I mean, I finished selling off my books today, and I was showing the guys what's left, and I have this the 5-foot bookshelf from 100 years ago. It's a 100-year-old set that my grandpa had and that my grandma recently gave me, and it was edited and put together in this compilation in 50 volumes by the dean of Harvard at one time, and he basically did it for liberal arts students and said, this is everything that the liberal arts student needs to learn to be well-rounded. And, you know, it's all the classics, the Greek classics, the Roman classics, the, you know, historical and religious scriptures. And the Harvard classics is definitely that notion that you should be well-rounded, that liberal arts, you should know a little bit about everything. And we've kept to that, but now it's gotten to the point that public education is rote memory. And so the best way for a student to learn the liberal education that they need, it's just to memorize stuff. Mm-hmm. And you just become a robot. And education, in my mind, is more... learning is individual. Education is institutional. And educational institutions should be about empowering individuals to learn, to become creative thinkers, to
cultivate that
to build a support structure, a framework for helping individual students grow and find out what they're good at and foster that. Yeah, you do need to have the basics of algebra. I need to know the basics of algebra, not very much, but just to function in life for things like budgeting. I don't need to know calculus. Not for what I do. You know, and I really, for the first time, was taught how to think critically, to be a critical thinker, in college. K through 12 was rote, boring, did not empower me to learn, and that to me is what education ought to be. I think the Montessori model is great.
I think a lot of what's happening with unschooling and other out of the box.
Peter Thiel's Genius Fund.
Quasi.
Khan's Academy, edX. Yeah. I've been redoing the Linux course in edX, and I'm finding stuff through Linux that like wow, I've missed that.
Yeah, and you know, the internet has destroyed all these major institutions. It's destroyed movies. It's destroyed music. It's destroyed, mm-hmm. you know, the
news.
Big, the news. It's destroyed all these things, and there are just
old hat stuff.
Yeah, there's a couple institutions that the internet has not been able to destroy: government/politics and education, and. You don't necessarily want to destroy education because that's, you know, there's kids involved. We got to do it for the children. But you are seeing different approaches start to take place. And, you know, if you go and watch something like Waiting for Superman and some of the other educational documentaries, you see in black and white, in a well-presented form, that the modern educational system does not work.
Well, ours was based off of the Soviet model. Mm-hmm. It's a, you know, a little-known fact. And what bothers me is, originally, the intent, even going back to the founders of publicly funded education, was to promote citizenship. How can you maintain this republic if you don't have an informed citizenry? That's been abandoned a long time ago. Civics is hardly included in any curriculum whatsoever. Most kids couldn't even tell you what the legislative bodies are once they graduate. 52% of Americans don't know Joe Biden's vice president.
Right.
So...
Does Joe Biden really know he's vice president? Let's be honest.
I think he can't wait to remind everybody, every room he walks into, you know?
Yeah.
So I just look at it and say, well, what was the original intent? We're clearly no longer there. So now what has replaced that? And it seems like publicly funded education has purely become employment because they're so afraid what would happen if the, you know, teachers unions actually, like, got broken up and schools were privatized. That scares the hell out of every public union in America.
Right.
Yeah, you see that happening here in Indianapolis with the with people attacking the charter school, like, oh, look, they're getting bad grades. I can't educate these kids. And a lot of the public school teachers are like, see, they need to go back to public schools. Like, those schools were failing. The difference between this and the charter school is getting shut down because it's failing.
Right.
You have to move to another school that's not failing. If that was a regular IPS school, meh, it failed. So what? You don't have another
We need
choice.
To spend more. Why do you hate inner city kids? We need to raise taxes so we can give them, mm-hmm. oh, wait, pay their teachers more.
Yeah.
Okay, so next letter is from Jason Doolittle. I've been a longtime listener. I've eagerly awaited every new podcast since about episode 30-something, but during your hiatus, I did take time to go back and listen to back episodes that I hadn't previously heard. First impressions, since you asked for them, as a group, you seem much more focused on the philosophy and principles of libertarianism, voluntarism, and capitalism now than in earlier episodes. Politics doesn't seem as important. Maybe that's because there's not a presidential election on the horizon, or maybe it's because you, like me, have come to believe that elections are nearly meaningless. Of course, it may also be that I'm just looking for justification for my apathy, and I'm projecting it onto you. Nevertheless, you tend to use current events more rather than politics. See what we discussed earlier. Lastly, just in general, you seem more open to other ideas about how to approach the ultimate goal of self-governance than in earlier episodes. Perhaps that's simply being more confident that there truly are more ways than you could think of to reach the same place. Or perhaps, much like Penn Jillette, you simply don't know what's right for the next guy and are willing to let him try what works. In any case, I really appreciate your hard work and dedication to continuing this podcast. And I'd love to buy you guys a pizza for the next time you record. Send me a PayPal account or something, and I'll happily buy you dinner, a small token of my appreciation. Not applicable to the Harry Maya episode. By the way, I shared Rachel's story, the Rachel Story podcast, episode 92, with my wife. She's getting closer to converting from neoconservatism to libertarianism all the time, thanks in part due to your good work. If listeners want to send us money for pizza, I'm all for that, because there's a Brazzini's down the road, and that is tight. So
Brazzini's.
I live within 5 minutes of the two best pizza places in the entire state, Giacomo's and Brazzini's. Mm. Now,
no coincidence.
This is a strategic location. Mm-hmm. It's like the strategic grill location from What's His Face's album. So yeah, I would definitely agree with Jason that like I said earlier, our focus has gone from the political process. Part of it was that I am the I'm the one who kind of lays out what we're going to talk about and produce the show and kind of say, hey, let's talk about these topics. Because if I'm not interested in it, then we just kind of don't talk about it. You know, I'll occasionally let Greg slip one in there, but the...
Why can't we talk about abortion?
Get out. Third rail. But, you know, my...
Edit that out.
I kid.
Jason, I think, is right, where my view has shifted from we need to use the political process to reform society to now reform society on its own. Let everybody do it themselves. So what do we need to, you know, libertarianism is about tearing down the government when let's just, now my view has gone from we need to get into the government, infiltrate it, and change it from the inside to now more like, let's just pretend that government doesn't exist. Let's just do it on our own, and then eventually it'll just go away. If we, it's like,
just hope that they just go away.
Yeah, like
you're gonna office space them.
It's like, hey,
it's not gonna go anymore.
It's like that guy or girl that you're texting with that you don't want to date anymore. You do the dip. You know, you just throw them a couple little texts, and then you disappear after a while. Like, oh yeah, I got busy.
That almost sounds like personal experience.
It's happened to me a lot. Trust me, there's lots of girls that stop talking to me. But
that's sort of easy to do with like the federal government, local government. They're there. They'll take your car.
Right.
They'll take your house. So you kind of have to participate in their system.
Yeah. So I definitely think that we here at the show have morphed over time, over the last couple years, from talking about political current events and being politically interested to more like politics is irrelevant. Who is the candidate of the Republicans or Democrats doesn't necessarily mean much. But I also, you know, I didn't give a crap about this last election. I didn't know who was running. There was no local elections. The year before that here in Indiana, where we're based out of Indianapolis, there wasn't any elections that year. I mean, 2009, 2013, and then 2017 will be just dead years where there's nothing going on. So,
right.
So it kind of becomes as... there's no major political elections, you know, there's not much that you can talk about politically, and you can only talk Rand Paul worship and versus Hillary Clinton so many times, so you got to kind of, you know, pick the major topic of the day and talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Then so. You just see, like, you know, just posturing between different political parties are doing this, they do before this, and then you can just sit down and pull out all the BS. The other party's doing this, but hey, you know, 12 years ago they said this, and
yeah, totally. So yes, I would agree with Jason that the tone of the show especially shifted once Greg got here, and he's a little more interested in political philosophy than current events. Where
I love current events, I just, you know,
more politics, the grind of politics. Where the first season of We Are Libertarians, let's say, with Creighton and Galt, they were definitely more into what was going on politically. And then Greg, not as much, you know. And Chris, Creighton, and I all were working for political organizations. Greg hasn't.
No, I'm not a big fan of... One, I just am so bad at going along to get along, like, right. I would be the worst campaign worker on the planet, because I would purposefully go out and undermine if they ever disagreed with me. So, like, I am a nightmare to ever have on your campaign.
No, that means you're the candidate, because that's what candidates do. Like, oh, you guys spent all these hours figuring this out and putting this event together? I'm going to do exactly what I want, not giving a shit about what you wanted. That's a candidate.
I don't like this speech. I'm going to talk from the heart.
Right. Oh, those are the worst words that could ever come out of a candidate's mouth. So I definitely think there was a time where I was training a lot of candidates, and that was sort of more on my top of mind. And, you know, I especially this year have handed more of the prep and decisions of what we're going to talk about over to Greg. So that's part of why you see
this. So all hatred can be pinned right. solely on me.
Listen, I'm a political creature. I will take none of the blame and all of the glory. So, Harry... Mm-hmm. Anything happened since we last met? Anything gone on? Anything happened since our last episode? Any big news in the world that we could talk about tonight? I'm drawing a blank here.
Well, there's some of that stuff that happened in Staten Island, New York. We talked about that.
Did somebody come out with a cronut? It's a croissant and a donut mixed together. Is that what we're talking about? The big news?
As delicious as cronuts are.
Okay.
No, it's about the grand jury's decision not to indict Pilato. What is it?
Pilato? How do you say his name?
Palladio, or is it? I don't know exactly. Loaf? I know it's Palateo. So Palladio.
Yeah, Palladio. He's just Italian.
So the Ferguson stuff, I think everybody kind of has a pretty good handle on it, and we didn't go too in depth last episode on it, but I think the two are definitely tied together. You know, so as everybody is kind of coming out of the shock of there being no indictment in Ferguson for the police officer, you know, I think our opinion was definitely that whether he's guilty or not, there should have been a trial. There deserved to be some justice for Michael Brown's parents.
Correct.
There is enough doubt. There is enough doubt either way for there to be a jury trial. And the DA there made a very politically shrewd decision.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's give all sides exactly what they want, which, as you always know, is never good for justice and always pisses everybody off.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, all right, well, if we do a grand jury, then that gets me out of all the political hot water. It keeps the city from melting down during a month-long trial. It keeps the quote-unquote community happy, because then there will be a jury decision, and then all the white people will be happy because then justice will be served when he's not indicted.
And then I'll win my next election.
Yeah. Right.
It's like he forgot what happened in 92.
Right. And so so he denied justice for Michael Brown and his parents and his supporters at the and didn't really, you know.
Did he, though, do it, or was it the way the system is designed? Because there was no chance of getting beyond a reasonable doubt.
It totally is his decision how to present the case.
I know, but the six African-American eyewitnesses all testified to the same way as Officer Wilson,
mm-hmm.
and you have to get beyond a reasonable doubt, so it has to be unanimous.
Right.
So when you have six eyewitnesses that all testify the same account as the officer, can you really convince any jury, no matter what, it's beyond a reasonable doubt?
Why don't you talk about the grand jury process? Because it applies to both of these, and I know we went to Harry, and now we're cutting him off. But
you know about it as well, right?
Yeah, they have like 23 different people on the grand jury trial, just about, and that they sit there. And it's not like a typical trial that everyone mm-hmm. like sees on like those like Law and Order. That it's not that.
It's not 12 right. Angry Men. You know, you're not sitting in the back room deliberating.
So
which is the IPS Civic course? You just watch 12 Angry Men.
Yeah,
because you had an interesting discussion about the grand jury process. So why don't we review what that is exactly, and then let's go to the Eric Garner case and exactly what happened there.
Okay. Well, I mean, all I'm saying is that I had enough.
I'm going to eat a Reese's Pieces.
Should we just sit silently and listen to the munching?
Mm.
I feel like this could be like a hotline you could call.
1-800... 1-800 Reese's Pieces.
Anyway, I feel like a lot of this was lost on me until I had this discussion with an attorney that said that there was absolutely no chance they were ever gonna return, you know, an indictment, purely because they had six African American eyewitnesses that all testified to the same account as Officer Wilson. You have to be beyond a reasonable doubt, regardless of whether or not race plays a part in that or credibility. You know, who cares? At the end of the day, you're not going to convince 23 people that, given same members of the community testify the same as the police officer, you can't get beyond a reasonable doubt and unanimous. It would just be highly unlikely. And so given that, that tells me that it was farce, but it was done to, you know, kind of quell the tempers of the community and the riots and the protesting. And then I hadn't really thought of it this way, and I felt a little bit like hypocritical. So it's designed that way so that someone's freedom is, you know, put up to a very high bar. If someone's going to be indicted, it has to be a very high standard. So that applies as a citizen, too.
Yes.
So if Darren Wilson were not a police officer but a citizen and something similar had happened, would there be the animosity towards him that his we would want his freedom taken forever?
But sure. The thing is, it would have skipped the grand jury. It would have went straight to a criminal trial.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. But I'm just saying, I hadn't really considered that. I'd never thought about Darren Wilson as an individual having his freedom taken, and what bar would I hold that standard of evidence to in that event? So let's say it was that trial, and there were conflicting opinions.
Right.
If I'm sitting on that jury, I want to be, before I'm going to decide to take someone's rights away forever and imprison them, I want to be absolutely certain I'm making the right decision. So I thought about, if I'm on that jury, not the grand jury, but hypothetical one, mm-hmm. my anger and hatred for authority and the cops definitely influenced how I felt about the outcome of that decision, way more so than me ever thinking about Darren Manning as an individual.
Darren Wilson.
Yeah, sorry, Darren Wilson.
Darren Manning is a race car driver from England.
Yeah, I know Darren.
Yeah.
He's not very good. He's drunk most of the time at Scotty's.
But yeah, if it would have been a regular person in the street, the prosecutor probably wouldn't ask for a grand jury. He would have straight to a criminal trial. We would have had a criminal trial. This, you were right. This is a political move by that prosecutor because he did not want to put this cop in for a criminal trial. Because probably would have lost. Or who knows? Who knows what would happen? Who knows what would happen to the criminal trial? This is more of just testing the water to see if he could do how the community would react on a grand jury trial. And if it went now, then he could wash his hands clean from it and go like, look, I tried.
Oh, and that's clearly what it was.
Yeah.
At a certain point, I get, and I don't mean to be conspiratorial at all, but I think that clearly this has been a great fundraising issue for certain organizations.
Yes.
And so I begin to think, one, the Justice Department in Ferguson clearly has a limited budget every year that's allotted.
Mm-hmm.
This clearly took a lot of resources. It took a lot of money. They spent a lot of time on that. I would be interested to find out if they will be getting supplemental funds for doing this, for trying this case and taking it there with no chance to win, and if anyone actually gave them the all clear that they would maybe get federal funds as assistance for this, so that the circus could keep up and so that they could keep this thing going and fundraise off of it longer.
Here's the flip side of this case, right? Like, you're right, like this doing, like going after this guy, sacrificing him because they didn't know for an unknown. What was that one case that they possibly thought some guy shot a couple of cops out in front of the police station in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and he went out in the woods, right? They couldn't find him. They spent months looking for this guy in the woods, had helicopters, having hunters go out there, all kinds of spending, probably close to a little over $1 million of police force, police coming from around the country, coming to that area to try to find this one guy that shot one of their own.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you go back and you listen to that episode, there's a couple episodes that we would recommend that people go back and listen to in our feed that kind of relate to all this, because I think a lot of what we said then still applies. Definitely the what was the cop's name, that rogue cop in L.A.?
Oh,
wasn't it Christopher Dorn?
Dorner? Something like, yeah, Dorner.
Yeah.
Go back and listen to that episode, and then go back and listen to the police searches in the Boston. Yeah, in the Boston marathon bombings.
Right.
And then also in the feed is the Radley Balco, the warrior cop speech. It's a couple hours of just incredibly insightful and useful information on the militarization of the police and a lot of what's going on here. And you know,
ISIS.
I mean, he makes the point that, you know, Radley Balco made the point in that it is a dangerous job, and it is becoming decreasingly it's just less dangerous of a job now than it used to be.
They die at less of a rate than
dangerous
we do.
Job. Dangerous job.
Yeah.
And how's that job dangerous?
And it's because we as a society have now sworn to police officers that they will come home at the end of the day no matter what, even if it means killing a citizen.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
Their life is worth more than Eric Garner's.
Yeah. Well, how is their life, their job dangerous? You can't touch them. You cannot touch them. Touching them involves you getting the jail time. Even if you were in the right? The officer hit you and they're completely in the wrong. Yeah, no, sorry, you're going to jail.
I mean, Eric Garner got...
And then it's different. If one of them got hurt, it's because they kicked over a hornet's nest. They went somewhere, possibly they should have went, or because somebody made a law, so they made something underground, so they had to go after somebody with a flower plant, and they want to protect their flower plant, and they used guns to protect their flower plant for their business. When you go against someone like, how about like a gas station clerk? Now that job's dangerous. They're unarmed. They're sitting in somewhere with a bunch of money in a safe, and they get robbed all the time.
By Mike Brown.
Yes. That job is dangerous. You know, that guy could have been killed. You know, now that's a dangerous job. Yeah. Truck driver, that's a dangerous job there. Someone doing rigging work, that's a dangerous job. Coal mining, that's a dangerous job.
Yeah.
They do have a huge advantage in every situation they walk into, mm-hmm. and they have a legal advantage because they are default.
They have armor. They have backup on the ready. They have people just sitting there, SWAT team basically, sitting in there on the ready, full of all kinds of high-powered weapons and just waiting, just jacked up on an adrenaline, just waiting to be able to use it. They use it for the most ridiculous different things. They have tear gas, high-explosive rounds, just to use it. They're ready.
And they die at a less rate in work-related incidents than the average than the American public.
Yeah, they get better rates when it comes to the mortgage. They get cheaper insurance. They get discounts when going different places in their uniform. Certain police forces allow them to take squad cars home. Then there's even civil asset forfeiture that allows them to take money home to have bonuses for the different departments.
Well, we talked about this in the wake of the Ferguson, right after the Ferguson stuff happened. And those are episodes that you can go back and listen to as well, that kind of, you know, where we lay out some of the philosophical points of all this. Because we're not trying to analyze the details of this. We're trying to look at it from a libertarian perspective and kind of apply some libertarian philosophy as opposed to, you know, here's the dates and times and facts and figures of what happened. You know, so it's still kind of evergreen stuff that you can go back and hear it, even if we don't know all the details, which I think we know as much now as we did back then, even after all the documents have been released.
Exactly.
You know, and I'm informed. Greg's well informed. Harry, I don't know about you.
Yeah, I'm
you have
he
like
has comprehensive
I
notes.
He has like
I skimmed.
Yeah, he has notes, so he's probably well informed. But I don't feel like we've learned anything more about Ferguson through the releasing of the documents because the media keeps us so ill-informed, and it's just... You know, that's why you go, well, we need body cameras. We've got to see this stuff. This is going to help. And then you get a body camera showing a cop choking this one guy, Eric Garner, in Brooklyn, and then five cops jumping on top of him, and then he dies because of his health complications, and nothing happened to that guy either. So there literally is no difference between that and Eric Garner and Michael Brown and their situations with regards to the camera.
It did nothing to prevent his death. Absolutely nothing.
It did nothing to help further justice for him after he died.
And philosophically,
and it didn't do it, but it did help protect the cop.
Oh, absolutely. It's caused outrage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only thing it did protect the cop on when it came to that grand jury trial, it was a simple fact that when he did act upon that, he did not intently go to murder him.
Right.
It was ruled homicide. That just mean he was, what's the term?
The homicide ruling, it's not that he was murdered. Homicide, according to the coroner's definition, means that another human being caused his death.
Yeah.
Correct. It wasn't his intent. His intent was to bring him down because he was trying to enforce a crappy law that New York put in place.
And it would have never even been selling him if they didn't have such high cigarette taxes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There's so many
different tales of drug dealers who've put away the crack, put the cocaine away, and just started filling up trucks full of cigarettes.
So mm-hmm. let's stay on the body cameras. Obama, under the rules of essentially the laws that we're using to arm all these local police departments, not only is he adjusting that to now give them less militarized weapons, but also fund body cameras.
Yes.
But he's also putting it under his control as opposed to kind of making it a free-for-all. So now he's going to be able to have some veto power over what goes where and what doesn't, which I find...
Which, oh, yeah, that's
two more
work.
Years.
Right.
Yeah, that's good.
Wait till that power goes to a Rick Perry.
Right.
Wait till it goes to, you know, whoever the next. I mean, God forbid it ever comes to like Sarah Palin or Rick Santorum or Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
You're going to talk about like now. Well, we need AK-47s on the cops because they get you know, we want to watch those.
It wouldn't be AK-47s because that gun's cheap. They get something expensive.
Yeah.
And less reliable.
Yeah. The M80-something blah, blah, blah that doesn't barely work or something. But it cost $1 billion.
The mere presence of cameras on body cameras on police officers, though, does mean a drop in police abuses and power abuses in police incidents like these two cases. So for that reason, if the money is going to be spent, I would rather it be spent on body cameras than, you know, arming Lawrence with an MRAP.
I would rather it not be controlled by the individuals.
I'd rather it not exist in the first place, okay? Yeah. But if it's
Lawrence is very proud of their MRAP.
I think right. There's a, you know, given that we all live in an era where cell phone technology is readily available and citizen mm-hmm. journalism is an all-time high, Grant, and even the second video of Eric Garner's death, where the five cops were on top of him, that clearly shows that he was struggling and dying and asking them to stop.
Right.
That came from a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
What we need to do, granted the state would be completely against this, is essentially allow any citizen recording that can be verified that it hasn't been altered as admissible court evidence, regardless of the legal process. Because should you allow that, that is way more safe than the state being able to put cameras on every cop. You're essentially saying, okay, the surveillance state's fine. And in fact, we're willing to pay for it so that they can watch us all the time and then use that recording to go back and convict us of something at the time the cop was unaware of.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the only person indicted by a grand jury was the person filming the police officers.
Ooh.
So you get more on that story at our Facebook page. Go check that out. The video that you saw, that person is being brought up on charges for filming what happened. Hmm. Not the guy who committed homicide. I have a question that I just thought of. I don't know the cop's name in New York City. I know Darren Wilson. I know what he looks like. I know what he sounds like. I know his story. I know his side version of events. I know all about him. He's vilified. He's a freak show, blah, blah, blah. I don't know the name of the cop in the Staten Island case, in Gardner's case. I don't know what he looks like, what he's, you know, I don't know anything about him. Why do you think Darren Manning became, I did it now. Why do you think Wilson became such a freak show where this other cop isn't? What is the difference between the two? Or am I just not watching TV news?
No, I would say that the outrage, wouldn't you say, was almost, it almost piggybacked.
Yes.
So I feel like it was not getting much coverage. Then when Ferguson started testing well on Nielsen ratings, they decided to find another one that was closer to it since it was drawing viewers. And that's why there wasn't the length of time. There wasn't a special investigation, a 60 Minutes. Mm-hmm. They were like, well, that really pulled well. That really tested well. What else is going on? Where else can we find outrage? Let's throw it up.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. And we got a video.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But why not put the cop's face everywhere?
Why not?
Yeah, I mean,
because there was not the buildup. Like, the indictment was already done.
Ah, okay. I see what you're saying. Yeah. So it's not like it didn't just happen.
No,
yeah.
Like, the verdict was done, and came up on TV.
You know, I hadn't thought about this. When did Eric Garner die?
He died, I would say, I actually don't know off the top of my head.
I mean, because that's an interesting fact. I hadn't thought about that, because somebody get your phone out and look that up, because the grand jury came back, mm-hmm. but they're all wearing summer outfits. Outfits.
Yeah.
Listen to me. I'm so fancy.
Yeah. I think that was around, I want to say August, but
yeah, so now they've found it. So it almost has become, your point's interesting.
July 17th.
It's become now a manufactured story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there, I wonder if it is something that it was very in the news in the New York City area, but not necessarily a national story. Had the grand jury gone through, I don't think that there would be the outrage. But I think because the grand jury didn't indict within a week or two after the Wilson case, the Mike Brown case, it became a hot story. So that's interesting.
Yeah, there was that ambiguity. Mm-hmm. And I really do think the media was, you know, The video, I think the civil and police state has drawn much more, or has drawn way more eyeballs than they would have ever anticipated, because really, you know, civil rights is not something since OJ that's drawn a lot of viewers.
Correct. And before, like, Mike Brown shot out, that was just another black guy getting killed on a Thursday night that most people just really didn't like. Meh. Oh,
right,
that happened.
Right. He's just a dirty criminal that broke the law. You know, and that is so...
Tax.
As you talk to people, and I talk to people on Thanksgiving and family members, you know, that is just the prevailing attitude. And you, Harry, being an African-American...
Black.
Nay, black man. You don't like the term African-American?
No.
Because?
I have never been to Africa. I don't intend to go to Africa.
You know, the attitude that I get... When you're not around, Harry, because
okay.
I'm sure the words would be different if you were in the room with my family on Thanksgiving. Well, Mike Brown committed a crime, so he got what he deserved. Eric Garner didn't comply with the officer. Had he just listened, you know, these black guys, they're all the same. They just break the law. You know, they're all criminals. I mean, how... I don't even know what my question is. I just kind of want you to respond to that mindset, because you, being a black man in America, do you find that people are predisposed to say, not just black people, but anyone who has ever been arrested for anything, there's an attitude that they're worth less. They're not as valuable to society and the human race as a person who hasn't committed a felony. You know, Eric Garner's life is worth less because he sold a cigarette, and that is against the law.
Right. Well, because, like, he's having the fact of being, like, that outskirt minority that... Because right now, and for the last, what has it been, like, almost 50 years, it's been black people, because they haven't been able to beat up on the, like, because the Italians, now they're just white, and Irish, they're just white, so it's just a big group of white people, so what can we rally against the black people?
Right.
They look different.
It's good. Yeah, I just actually sold a book today called How the Irish Became White. I wish I had read it now, because... I could give you an insight how the Irish became white, but
I think it was called the Joe Kennedy story.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. These minorities get into the power circles, and clearly, having a minority as the president of the United States did you guys no favors.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, they say the same thing about Irish people here in Indianapolis in around 1956. The same thing they say about black people, they say about Irish.
Right.
It's the same thing. Oh, these people don't do anything. They don't take care of their kids. They're loud and obnoxious. Right. They're violent. They're just nothing but thieves.
Right.
And Catholic.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. And we've talked a lot about this in the wake of airing Rachel's story. If you haven't heard it, go back to listen to episode 92. Really important. It ties into these two stories. And it really comes down to the fact that we treat people who commit crimes as less than human.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are in the criminal justice system in any form or fashion, then you are less of a person.
Right.
And the people who have to deal with these scumbags on a daily basis, like a police officer, a parole officer, a judge... correctional facility
warden.
Officer,
mm-hmm.
they have such a tough job dealing with these less thans of society that they need to be put up on a pedestal a little bit. And, you know, you can see how that mentality has become institutionalized in the media and in the way that we support the criminal justice system at
the way we
various
shut
levels.
Down our streets for police funerals and
right.
literally shut down cities.
Right. Yes.
Nobody wants anything. I want when a police officer goes out on patrol, I want them to come back home to their families. And I want there to be less laws and less situations, because if there's less laws, there's less chance that an Eric Garner situation happens.
Correct.
Because if he's not violating this bullshit law of selling a loose cigarette on the street, he's not getting tackled by five cops. He's not dying. The cop's not going to trial. You know, less laws equals less violence.
All we want to do is make police officers' jobs, one, way more important to society, mm-hmm. for, like, real crime.
Right.
and way less burdensome.
Real right. crime.
They should love libertarians. Like, they should absolutely worship at our feet.
Which is why I truly, truly hate, like, the mentality that we need to hate cops. But cops are the front lines of the state. And as we have an increasingly, as our government, as Creighton said on Facebook, you're seeing the direct results of a government that chooses to use force as its first option instead of the last. Government is force. So anytime, and this is why people love to use the government to change society, to produce an outcome in society. They want you to behave a certain way because they think it's better. They, meaning like a social conservative, doesn't want gay people to get married, so they pass a law that keeps two gay people from getting married, because if they don't obey and they don't change their behavior, they go to jail or become financially ruined or both, or now die at the hands of the front line of the state, a police officer.
Right.
The person who has to take that force and apply it. And I don't want anything to ever happen to a police officer because I don't want violence to happen to anybody. Mm-hmm. I would like a police officer to think about their role in this cycle of force and what am I contributing to society. And if I choose to not participate in the system, can the system continue to be perpetuated? If I quit my job and I go work in a nonviolent role, then there's less of people like now. On the flip side, that person who's having those thoughts is a human being and sounds like a fairly decent, rational person. And so you're left with nut jobs who just want to kill everybody. You know, they're basically
Mad Max.
Exactly, right, yeah.
You know, in the police officer. But that's a risk I'm willing to take.
People like either who wanted to go in the military but didn't want to leave America.
Mm-hmm. So the reason we see an escalation of these events is because the government is using more force because it is trying to produce more social outcomes. And that's why more and more people hate the cops. That's why more and more people. Part of it is not just the fact that it's institutionalizing violence and force. It's also like people respond to hating cops when really they should be thinking about how much they hate the lawmaker.
Exactly.
And the governor that signed that shit.
They see the cop. They see the cop in the unmarked squad car that's all black and tinted window. They see the cop in the all black uniform with the gun on this side. You know, notice everyone's all fine with them open carrying massive guns on the side of their hips with extra clips. They're fine with that crap.
But there is a
I meant magazine.
Feeling though that they are somehow more responsible and more human, like they are human being just like anybody else who open carries.
Yes.
They are just as prone to
make mistakes.
If they're hungry and they haven't eaten and they're on the screw. I mean, we have the worst, cops have the worst divorce rate because of their sleep cycle, because it's so screwed up and so bizarre.
It'd just be like if they're human. They make mistakes. Remember, Bassard went down the entire time as a police officer and still admitted that I wasn't drunk when I crashed when his car, even though we have blood alcohol to prove that he was.
Yeah, there is a case here in Indianapolis, Bissard, B-I-S-A-R-D. It's been a big deal where a cop was drunk driving, allegedly, and smashed into somebody. He maintains that he wasn't. I think we talked about this on the last podcast.
He was convicted on that.
Oh, was he? Yeah, he was. But it isn't
both times.
It is society at large that sits there and says, well, a police officer is more responsible than your average person to carry a gun.
Well, let's think about that process, though, because that touches on what we talked about earlier with in regards to the question, Travis Wyke's question about education is from a very early age, our default position is to respect authority.
Mm-hmm.
And we can talk, you know, people can disagree, the pluses, the minuses to that sort of, you know, system, but we see anyone that works in as a teacher, firefighter, police officer, town board, town council, as a dutiful public servant who sacrifices themselves to a higher calling so that we may enjoy the benefits of the system, when in reality that isn't the case at all.
Exactly.
They are better paid. Mm-hmm. They definitely enrich themselves outside the role of that office or position. They are held to a lower standard of accountability than you are that the market enforces on anyone in the private market.
Yep, they investigate themselves.
They literally are the fox in the hen house.
Yep.
And does that mean that every public servant's bad? No, of course not. There's great police officers. There's Brad Rogers up in South Bend. There's great sheriffs. But at the end of the day, the 90% ruin it. There's 10% that are actually in it and don't have to be forced to take those roles because they do see themselves as dutiful servants that protect you. The other 90% are self-interested.
Yep.
And so they're going to protect that self-interest and do whatever they can as possible because you trust them. You've been educated to trust them and respect their authority. They are the closest. I've said before that government is just intelligent design for atheists. That is all it is. It is literally producing outcomes, playing God with the absolute force of the state. Yep. And so they take the advantage of that and go ahead and act like they have free license.
Yep. And they just run with it. And just like as strong and as powerful as a teacher's union, the police union is even stronger.
Way more strong.
You know, you think it's hard to fire a teacher? Psh, try to go after a cop.
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine teachers now in Indiana have the pay for performance? Imagine doing that to police officers, that you got paid based on the fewer number of complaints.
Complaints or cases solved. Most cops don't even, like, how do they really solve cases? If it wasn't for people snitching, they don't really do real detective work.
I have a friend who experienced domestic violence issues, and the cops would come out and say, well, what'd you do to mess with their heads? You know, or wouldn't file police reports on the situation because they just didn't need to and they didn't believe her. Now, it legitimately happened, and there may be a cover story coming soon in a local news outlet that will kind of shed some light on this cop and how bad he is towards victims of domestic violence. He has been in trouble for it. He is, you know, unwilling to help a victim of abuse and is constantly under disciplinary action. Can't get him fired for anything. Can't get him to get off the streets for anything. It doesn't matter. You just can't do it. Yep. Because he's so well protected. He's a bad dude who takes the side of the man every single time and is probably responsible for deaths because of that. You know, and there's nothing you can do to get rid of this scumbag.
Nope. And he will retire with a police pension and go on probably beating women.
Mm-hmm. Full police pension. He's probably moonlines as a security guard at different hot spots like that, making just all this type of different money. So.
You know, and then when you try to shop that story around to local news outlets, they don't want to run it because they're the ones running the ad campaigns to put the blue lights in your front window. You know, we had all the news stations here in town promoted this effort to put blue lights to the point that local Walmarts couldn't keep blue light bulbs in stock in your porch light out front to show how much you support the cops because we had a police officer who was killed in the line of duty. And in the wake of that, put out the blue lights, shut down the city for an entire day, rent out the basketball arena to have the funeral. Every police officer, you know, they're shutting down streets. And it is literally like the president died here in Indianapolis. It is that scope and scale.
I would argue that the president would get less turnout than this police officer did in Indianapolis.
Probably. Yeah. Yes. And it just... I don't want to demean or belittle the loss of a police officer and what that person meant to their family, their friends, their community. By all accounts, this was a good guy who had their heart in the right place and was doing things unseen because a lot of times police get the bad rap. They don't. The good stuff that they do, they spend 90% of their time around the bottom 10% of society. They respond to needs, charitable needs. They're on the front lines of the worst situations in our society. And so a lot of them do good stuff. So we're not trying to say that they're all bad.
And they didn't create those.
And no, they're, you know, but shutting down the city for a guy who lost his life in the line of duty is state worship.
Yes.
And the news outlets are participating in that because it's good for ratings, because they want to show they're part of the community, not just, you know, and so if you go take this story of this officer who was helping abusers, None of them will take it because they're not going to be the ones who get the phone call from the police chief. And it's just like John Stewart ended his program the other day with. It's these same situations. You know, hey, I really wish you had come, the police chief talking to the DA about his officer being indicted or not being indicted, and then following it up with, by the way, are you my secret Santa? You know, the media outlets, the police chiefs, the politicians, the city councilors, the district attorneys, they're all from the same group of 200 people in the city of Indianapolis that know each other, that work with each other. And if you piss on somebody, they're going to piss on you back. And so you'd better just not ruffle any feathers or rock the boats because as a member of the media, you may not get access. You know, it's just, it's insane what goes on and how well tied everything is to each other. And it creates a good old boy network that doesn't create a system of justice. So if you're one of the little guys, you know, it's like George Carlin says, it's a big effing club and you're not in it.
Well, and you know, I hate to just critique and not offer a solution. And then, you know, so you think about this from a libertarian perspective is how do you affect change on some system like this? Because if you look at it from the perspective of how are we ever going to get those in power to reduce their power, you're not going to get there. And allowing them to control essentially the surveillance apparatus with guaranteed cameras on you and then being able to tap into that database of video to convict you of past crimes, that's not a good solution. Bill had $263 million in funding and only, 70 or 50 was going to, 73 was going to fund these cameras and for 50,000 local officers.
Right, in its first season alone, and you know since the election season is going to be on, everyone's going to be on it. And now the two companies that are involved in making those body cameras, Digital Ally and Taser, right, their stocks went up this week. And then if you look at the Digital Ally board of directors, all of those people also work for a big oil too as well. So back to the big effing club. It's all the big effing club. And so now they're going for body cameras now because they've got people and friends and that own those companies.
It's like Karl Rove's marketing team right now in D.C. They're the number one marketing consultant for getting Obama phones within different regional markets.
You're kidding me.
Small government.
Say that one more time, please.
Karl Rove's marketing company, essentially firm, is now the number one consulting firm on getting Obama phones more widely distributed in regional markets.
Nice.
Glad I brought scotch.
Hilarious. Our friend Hannah just walked in.
I feel more Republican right now.
I know. No, I will. Just like we did to you, we've ruined her. She's like infinitely more libertarian leaning as a result of hanging out with us.
Good. I just hate it all.
Yeah.
So you're like Maya?
No.
Never go full Maya.
Yeah.
She's been in here like 2 minutes and she's already complaining about how cold it is in here. She's you don't have to stay.
It is cold in here.
It is here, you want some Reese's? Mm-hmm. All right, Greg, talk while I turn up the heat and deliver the lady some Reese's. I've had three, which is only 500 calories.
You said you have. How many more you can have?
I have 1,000 calories left for the day, so I can have three more.
Boom.
Yeah. So my sugars will be so high.
All right. So, Harry, let's just imagine that you are dictator of the United States. You are a kind, benevolent, libertarian dictator, and you have a solution to the police state problem. How do you go about it?
The strongest among us must disarm first.
So you would disarm the police?
It makes it just the local beat cop. I put them in all white uniforms and take their guns away from them. Give them sticks and whistles. What right. It would make wearing all white suits would careful and make sure they're not going around getting dirty or doing something that they're not supposed to because they're in all white suits.
Okay,
we know exactly where they've been because they're also in all white suits.
Okay,
not having a gun, they're not going to go somewhere. It's like that someone's not going to accidentally get shot because of heat of the moment arguments. If they feel that they actually need to bring a weapon or a weapon that needs to be called, they can call somebody. Someone from outside the argument will come and show up.
So, to an extent, a third party arbiter of
violent
disputes.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's not there emotionally. That is just there to make sure no one else gets shot.
And are they armed?
Oh yeah, they'll be armed.
Who do they? Who do they work for?
There'll be a separate, you know, almost, let's see.
SWAT team?
Yeah, not a SWAT team. I don't want to like the name SWAT. That's a bad term. Makes it think like they're coming in as SWAT ants or flies.
All right, so one, demilitarize.
Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. So you demilitarize, and then you need an independent third party that can essentially mm-hmm. analyze the situation, mm-hmm. scale it down.
Right.
And then what so what happens after that point? So they're able to...
Because that third party that comes with weapons, they have insurance on them. They're liable for if anyone does get hurt by their own weapons when they show up.
Okay, so they're, so you're basically talking about... What you're talking about is anarcho-capitalism. You're talking about a third-party service provider mm-hmm. in order to administer justice on a for-profit basis, and the more effective
doesn't
they are...
It doesn't have to be for-profit. It could be for non-for-profit.
Okay, yeah, so it could be for-fee.
Yeah.
For-fee, regardless of whether they can turn a profit.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so the better they're able to do that, does that mean the better they're able to distribute justice, or the better, like, what standard do you hold that sort of provider to?
Well, it's more like, because of this way, you don't have someone that's out there being all gung-ho. Like, because the way I view the police now, they're almost like a standing paid army. They might as well, but they're just a standing army that walks around. They just by name call the police.
Okay.
Just call themselves police. So if we take the pay aspect out of it, make them, they can only be volunteers, only one, probably, maybe one paid guy that does it full-time.
So you would have essentially one guy that's a civilian monitoring service that's basically the city tattletale that calls in the for-profit provider of justice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay.
Almost kind of the same way some cities do fires. Just volunteers showing up because you don't, you know.
So a civilian force.
Mm-hmm.
Now, imagine it's
almost like a
little
night
bit,
watch.
A night watchman.
Yes.
So imagine it's a little bit more of a dire situation.
Okay.
So it is a Mexican standoff, not necessarily between two Mexicans, but whatever a Mexican standoff is.
Mm-hmm.
And this arbiter watches it. These two gentlemen are pointing guns at each other.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't. How quickly can they arrive?
That would depend on locale, on where they are. But, you know, but since they're trying to give service, it's just probably the same, like, 5-10 minutes. It's probably the same speed that most police departments respond most calls now, 15 minutes.
True, and that is always the critique, is that, you know, any privatization always gets critiqued as saying, well, you guys aren't responding in a quick manner, you know, especially by those that support the state. They're always the first ones critiqued when the state's at arguably no different.
Right.
And so we dealt with that story with Rachel that, you know, Corizon is a private service provider. Mm-hmm. You know, the state of Indiana has outsourced the prison system. It didn't lead to a better outcome for her.
Right.
And so the reason why is that I would imagine it always comes down to dollars. The funds were getting tight that end of the fiscal quarter, and they needed to meet their stock projection. And so any extra expense hurts the provider's ability to provide those services.
Mm-hmm.
Is that necessarily what you want when, let's say, that it's the end of the quarter and this third-party service provider is out of the remaining contract funds and they can no longer get any more funds? What happens in this hypothetical situation when the city tattletale tries to call them in? We're sorry. We don't have gas for our truck. We can't arrive.
Well, in that hypothetical situation, I'm hoping maybe they could probably send out the hypothetical invoice. Or that the people in that town is like, well, just like most housing addition does with snowplow, you get from your lawn mowing contracts that you already have to have the lawns maintained in the area. You have four free snowplows. That's what you get for this certain period. If you use all four snowplows, any more snowplows will just be billed to you for later.
Okay.
And just like any good business, they could probably cash flow it to a next quarter. It's easy.
Okay. I'm never against necessarily using market-based solutions to problems. I just feel like that's a little bit right now far off from a politically achievable. I mean, it's not something we could implement very quickly. Do you think?
No, it could not. Yeah.
As far as a solution in time,
yeah. Yeah, that's also a lot of educating people to be, you know, to get them out of the mindset that the government or the state should watch out for their safety.
And so, for me, I struggle with the replacement sort of solution to anything. I feel like anything that's much more achievable is going to be done through a political framework of how can we empower citizens to essentially to decide these types of things. So how can we increase liberty between you, I, Hannah, which is never a good idea, and then Dear Leader over there, who's taking selfies right now. Mm-hmm. And so if that's the case, to me it looks like a much faster solution would be that anyone that has a cell phone can be can serve, you know, spy on agents of the law. Mm-hmm. And that would be a civic empowerment.
Watching the Watchmen.
Yeah. Yep, we're watching the Watchmen, because from all the evidence, it doesn't prevent, cops having cameras doesn't prevent crime, but what it definitely does is that it actually stops cops' poor behavior, or slows it down.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely does.
All right.
No, I mean, it definitely...
Does it? I've got so many different cases here in these folders right here that talks about how cases, like, they accidentally get... Oh, they're all not working. They all don't work. There's a case that happened in Utah where this guy had... it was the first city in the United States that the police said, oh, 2007... All our police force got cameras and microphones on them. They all have them, right? Guy gets guy calls the cops because he got an accident, because he got a tree broke. The police come out. Actually, I've got my notes here. Actually, I have notes on this one.
don't look at me like that. Listen, I was busy. I have a rule that when an attractive young lady enters my apartment, a fire will be started in the fireplace. So I had to start a fire.
Do you have any Barry White?
She has a boyfriend, but...
The fire does feel nice, though, by the way.
Yeah. I figured it would.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then I was busy taking pictures.
Yeah. All right. The guy's name is Mark Britt. He's a delivery truck driver that was in Utah. He called the cops because, like, he had an accident on the road. He had a collision with a tree branch that protruded in the street. So he called the cops, put up no resistance, and the then Gaia Flayus... found out they had some didn't provide proof of insurance, and had some outstanding tickets, so they placed him on a place under arrest. He politely made a single request of the captors, owing to several back surgeries and a spinal cord stimulator placed on him. Mark very slowly, carefully through the shirt and showed him his iPad size rectangular lump in the lower right back. And the cop responded back, "Don't tell me I do my job," and put his hands behind his back and slammed him in and shoved him in the cop car.
Sure. And I don't mean it to say that this is an all-encompassing solution.
That cop, you know, after realizing finally did something wrong, put his handcuffs in front of him, then finally took him to the emergency room after the thing was destroyed, his leg was seizing up. And then made sure when they parked in front of the emergency room, make sure he parked in front where there's no cameras at. Then proceeded to drag him from the squad car into the emergency room. The only cameras that ever caught any of this incident was the security cameras inside the hospital watching the cop punch him in the stomach. And that police force was supposed to have having body cameras and cameras for 3 years, yet all of them were broken at that time.
Sure. I mean, it's the same thing as the Lois Lerner, you know, the IRS emails. They're sudden lost.
Right.
You know, it's that if they're in charge of that, then that's not going to lead to anything because they're never going to keep the evidence on record in order to pull it up.
Exactly, which is ridiculous because it's storing data is so cheap. You can have average citizen can have petabytes of data in their house. It's,
sure,
it's so cheap, especially with Intel now developing their 10 terabyte SSD.
Sure, and so the likelihood that would happen again is very likely. It is very likely, unless it's held by individuals.
You want more cases? This is just happens where the cameras just are faulty. The dash camera, that dash camera footage corrupted.
And it's funny because it's like, well, I was arguing with somebody on Facebook. Oh, the only reason we're hearing about these police brutality cases is because they're rare, and now the media just wants to make it a story, so blah, blah, blah. I was like... I immediately went to the Raw story and pulled the article that I had just seen about a man being killed in Phoenix. I mean, it's happening more and more and more.
It is. And it really, let me give you an example, though. Would you say that, so let's say you were an officer of the law, and granted you would never do anything wrong because you're a libertarian and a perfect individual, but you would be more apt to watch what you did if you were on tape. That's a basic human experience, that when you are being watched, you are necessarily automatically thinking about what the repercussions were for your actions, how things could be portrayed. It's why politicians don't allow cell phone cameras when they give speeches to their hardcore fundamental donors, like Mitt Romney's 47% comment.
Yeah.
He doesn't make that comment.
That's why I'm always careful to say what I do when I'm in this apartment, because I know Hannah's stalking me.
Yeah. It's bugged in here.
I know.
I hear everything he says.
This is the second apartment complex she's followed me to.
She is kind of a stage five clinger.
I can't help that she's in love with me. It happens. That was Harry budging his microphone. That was not a fart. Okay, you guys can't hear what I heard, and it sounded like Harry just ripped ass in the microphone.
But if I was one of those jackbooted thugs called a cop, and I was behind a thin blue line at a fraternity of people who I know will watch my back and to make sure, oh yeah, that hard drive died. Hard drives die all the time.
You just ripped out every libertarian anti-cop cliche you possibly could. Jack booted fly the thin blue line.
You know, when you've got like a pastor, the head of the fraternal order in freaking Utah, saying like, oh, these videos are contradictory to police department are rare. You know, even though Carlos Miller's, you know, can possibly in his gigantic archives of videos could pull out like 10 of these incidents in like 5 minutes. You know, it's if you already know that that any accountability is going to be coming from your friend down the street because, you know, you guys all live together in the same neighborhood. And you know that, oh, that guy in IT is going to destroy it for me because he's got some back taxes. I'm just going to, like, look the other way for him.
It's just like Jon Stewart said. Are you my secret Santa? Yeah. So let's wrap up this part of the program to move on to the Rand Paul comments of what he said and kind of get into that a little bit. But any final thoughts on the body cameras, Harry?
They're crap. This is the fact that even though, like, everyone should have the right to videotape the police officers and or any dealings with the state. You should be able to videotape them. You have the right to videotape them. Do they really have the right to videotape us? We are private citizens. They work for the public. Even though they've got different cases of different judges throwing people into jail for bringing cameras in or bringing up age-old wiretapping laws when we try to record them. Yet would the NSA record all our conversation? Nah, that's totally fine. That's fine.
Right.
Writing exemption for themselves. So I don't think cameras are going to solve any problem other than putting money in someone's pocket. Until that video footage or gigantic raw data is put up in the cloud and anyone can surf that information that it's typing into a badge number and asking for a day or a time. Well, even then, will it really solve anything? Oh, great. Yes, saw it. Yes, you saw me beat his head in. It's okay. I gave my immunity to use bats.
Well, meow.
And that's usually what police officers do. They give themselves immunity.
Yeah. All right, so Rand Paul struck a nerve and kind of got it wasn't taken out of context. Just Jon Stewart didn't, you know, he got Rand Paul basically came out and said, if we didn't have stupid laws like the cigarette tax, then cops wouldn't have to go out and enforce them, and they wouldn't be put in these sort of situations. And he said it kind of that clearly. But Jon Stewart took it to mean like, yeah, you Republicans can't stay away from everything is taxes with you. It's all taxes are evil, and that's why he got killed was because of taxes.
We have to kill that runaway slave. Well, if we have runaway slave laws, then yeah, you did have to go chase him down and kill him.
Right. That was a very uncomfortable yet astute and accurate.
It's how I bring up every law. It's like, there were laws in this country to go take runaway slaves back to their slave masters. Right.
And Jon Stewart only says
your
those
explanation
things.
Didn't make it any less awkward, Harry.
Sorry.
Check your white privilege, Chris.
Jeez, I'm sorry. I didn't have ice. You're going to hold it against me the rest of the podcast.
That's okay. If scotch was meant to have ice in it, God would put it there.
He, Harry is, what would you call yourself? An avid drinker? An alcoholic?
Not an alcoholic.
Former bartender?
Former bartender. Yes, I am. Some labeled me a mixologist, whatever the heck that means. I'm a former bartender. I enjoy the taste of alcohol. The only time you ever see me without a drink is those few months during Lent. Then yeah. I do not drink.
So Harry brings over a full bottle of what you got there?
That's a little McAllen 12-year-old. It's just, you know, the traveling scotch.
And you brought your own glasses.
Yes.
And you brought your own water.
Yes.
Because we don't have water here.
He would have never bet he had to bring his own ice.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad I brought water.
There's probably jars and jars of mayonnaise somewhere in here, but God, no ice.
What does that mean?
Jars of mayonnaise.
So,
jeez.
He
maple syrup.
Maple syrup.
So he goes, Chris, do you have ice? And I said, no, I don't have ice. He's like, I just thought that was one of those things that all white people had, you know, like cheese.
And khakis.
Yeah,
I felt racially profiled. I know how you feel, Harry, and I don't like it. Not one bit. You and me, we're brothers now.
Do you not have cheese?
I have a lot of cheese. I have feta. I have blue cheese.
No,
I have
you don't.
Mexican cheese. Oh, I do.
Did you call it Mexican cheese?
I have Mexican cheese, both.
What exactly is Mexican cheese?
Queso fresco and queso chihuahua.
You have dog meat cheese from Guadalajara?
I don't have.
It's not dog meat.
It's chihuahua. Delicious. It's delicious. Whoa. Queso, quesadilla
dogs
melting
are expensive.
Cheese.
Expensive.
So I have a lot of cheese. I have Colby Jack. I've got Swiss. But I don't have ice.
I know.
So, Harry, I know how you feel. I've been racially profiled.
Do you have American cheese?
No. That is not cheese.
Cheese food product.
You're so Canadian.
American cheese, Velveeta cheese, those are disgusting. That is not real cheese.
Cheese food product.
Yeah.
On American.
Yeah. Gross.
It is gross cheese. I like Wensleydale. I prefer like a Sage Darby or something like that.
Right. I like cheese. I was just showing you up on top of the bookshelf next to the golden microphone. What do you see?
I have no idea. I'm in that top.
You can't see?
I see a picture of you as a baby.
Yeah, that's only thing I see.
Oh, there's a Canada item.
Oh, yeah. See?
It's a Canadian squeeze ball.
It's a great white menace.
I forget who gave that to me, but somebody came to be a guest on the podcast, and they brought me that squeeze ball. I remember who it was.
So Rand Paul says this.
So back to the show.
And because this is devolving into chaos.
Hannah got here and I totally lost focus.
You did. You totally went like that excited schoolboy that all of a sudden the girl comes over to your house.
She's not wearing pants and she's got high heels on. It's not, and she's eating, she's got an entire box of Reese's. This is like my dream girl here right now. She got a box full of Reese's on top of her. She's got 31 now that she's had some. Reese's.
She's working on two.
If you ask nice enough, I'm sure Maya would do the same thing for you.
Oh, yeah. But did I say that out loud? I thought that was
that
in my
came
head.
Out.
So I felt like Rand Paul actually got the short end of the stick a little bit up. He got unfairly attacked when he was really trying to make the point that bull crap laws lead to death.
Yes, yeah.
For sure.
But he usually does when he makes a point.
And to make that argument that it doesn't have anything to do with taxes, how the hell does John Stewart think cops are paid?
Magically.
Yeah, it's all taxation. So everything, and I've made this point a million times, much to Spangle's chagrin, is that everything's economics.
Yes, everything.
Everything is human action, which is all economics is. And so the fact that cigarettes are so... they're taxed so heavily it's prohibitive, that creates a black market. That black market creates people willing to make a profit and skirt with the law. That creates police officers thinking that they can enforce the law because we give them license because we refuse to dock them pay for performance.
Yep.
Economics all the way down. John Stewart may not be smart enough to realize that, and I can't help him that he's not smart enough to do that, but he should have someone on, like, I don't know, any libertarian at all.
Right.
Like Thomas Sowell.
Any individual that actually understands that tax revenue comes from people, from citizens, which he clearly is not that smart.
No. Or he doesn't want to like admit to it. But Greg is right. Everything comes from economics. I had a problem in my office with a couple of my employees. I solved the problem using just Adam Smith economics, like victim of the minority. I was the only manager in the building. So everyone I was a problem between me and upper management. So what did I do? Create middle management. So now they're the middleman minority, not me.
It's finally nice to make somebody else a minority, isn't it, Harry?
Oh, yeah. It was great. It was awesome.
How does it feel to be the man?
Oh, it is great. I have actually, the other day, had a white boy get me coffee. It was amazing.
A what?
I had a white boy get me coffee. It was great.
Why was he a boy?
Huh? Oh. He's 22. He's
22. Ageist.
Yep. And it felt great as I sat in my chair with my three monitors and had him go get me coffee. I was like, oh, this is awesome.
Well, I feel like I've watched like a reinterpretation in the modern era of Roots.
Black,
thanks a lot, Harry.
Privilege and has its benefits, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. When it comes back to taxes, right? The same people out there upset about the police doing this with taxes for smoking are the same people who were the anti-smoking crowd.
Right.
If there wasn't so much of an anti-smoking crowd to push taxes to get people to quit smoking and then pushing the margins on cigarettes up there. Cigarettes in New York is about almost $10 a pack.
$12 a pack.
$12 a pack. That's a 50% margin just buying them straight up from like North Carolina is just driving up there. It's a 50%
happens,
margin.
Yeah.
What else can you get a 50% margin on with little to no work?
It's literally software. That is the only thing I could possibly think of. Like, that would be the only other market where you might get that kind of margin.
Make a Silk Road for illegal cigarettes in New York. Oh, great.
There we go.
It's like you think that doesn't exist.
I only take payment in Spangle coins. We're going to create a digital currency that will only... They'll be like Spangle bucks.
We should do that.
If you don't create that by the time I wake up in the morning, you don't have a hair on your ass.
I will do it. I will create Spangle Bucks. Now, the question is whether anyone will trade in it like it's a viable currency. Because people know your character. They can listen to this podcast.
Hey.
There'll be a big Mount Vox disappearance of all the Spangle coins, and this podcast will end.
I'll take them to Pork Fest and just pass around Spangle coins. It's like Dogecoin. Yeah, we'll get that going around.
Exactly. Yep. Just hold the currency early and then dump it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I sorry, she's throwing me off. She's like the heckler in the back of the class.
You are really off your game since she walked in the door.
She's heckling me.
It's amazing.
Fair.
I mean, no, you have heckling. Like just your presence has gotten him so off his game. It's incredible.
She loves to like screw with me.
What is she doing now?
She's Snapchatting me things that she's Snapchatting me pictures of her boyfriend, and I don't like it. No, that's a joke. He's very funny. Now we talked about it at the end of Rachel's story, episode 92. Just how serious voting is, you know, and you see how institutionalized the lack of empathy that people who work for the system have for the people that they're supposedly serving. You know, here's an instance where a young woman is very ill, and over the course of, you know, 100, 200, 300 people who came in contact with her over a 4-month period, one person had the decency to call her dad and let him know where she was, you know, and nobody was lifting a finger to help this man find his daughter. It's just an inhumane, indecent system. And you voted it in. Like there is a huge part of me that just is totally exasperated when somebody like a Jon Stewart realizes how there's this idea that government can be a useful tool in making a better society.
Right.
That the liberal argument is that government can be used for good. And I even almost feel like Barack Obama has had that faith shaken in him, because here's a guy who's like, you know, government isn't evil. Government isn't part of the problem. Government is good. Government is what helps people. And anytime you ever talk to anybody who's remotely involved in the government, like if you talk to a police officer, they'll tell you the government's the worst because they get a paycheck from it. You talk to a teacher, the government's the worst because they get a paycheck from it. You talk to somebody who... You know, even somebody who is in a disadvantageous situation, and there's all these government programs that can help somebody who is lower income, a victim of domestic violence, or a victim of take your pick. Somebody out there that has had programs designed for them to help them,
right.
Food stamps, healthcare, all these various things. There is no way for one of those folks to figure out what is available to them to help them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no... this concept was developed as the explorer, part of the healthcare law.
The navigator.
The navigator, that's what it was. There's nobody who can say, like, oh, if you want this, you go here. If you need this, you go here. Like, it totally is... It's just to the point that it is so frustrating, so complicated, so... There's so many, like, different sources of information that all say the different thing, that people just get like give up. They just say, I'm not going to go get involved. I'm not going to go get the help that it's just the system now exists to pay people for services that aren't even rendered.
And that's always been its intention.
Yeah,
it's the employer of last resort.
Right.
Yeah.
So but we voted it in. Like, it is us as a society have created this monster. It's like the movies, the Matrix or Total Recall, where we create artificial intelligence and then it rules us. Like, that's where we're at. That's what we have done. We have chosen the government that is killing people.
Mm-hmm.
It, we have, and so what do you do about it? How do you improve it? How do you go about doing it? Does doing nothing work?
You all right? Okay.
Well, that's been tried, and that didn't work out very well.
Did you just say secession?
Yeah, secession. But like,
he can get away with that.
We won't fire on Fort Sumter. Just don't fire at that. Just break away.
You want to ask Brett Bittner how that worked out for Atlanta?
I love a good Civil War joke.
Oh, well, regardless, I mean, it is. It's there's no good answer, unfortunately. So you essentially drop out. You don't participate. You refuse to acknowledge the state and its authority over you and will not vote in order to contribute its tyranny over you? Or do you go vote and try to find individuals you believe won't be corrupted by the system in order to change it from the inside? And unfortunately, neither of those is likely.
Well, I think like the solution I came up with to it is basically just trying to find like a community of people who also see the same thing and that rejects the system and then just wants to walk away from it. And that's mainly the reason why I signed up for the Free State Project. It's that simple fact of these group of people think closer to the way I am. They see the gigantic Leviathan. They know that they cannot change it from the inside, but they can protect a small little section of it.
Is that likely?
It's the what other shot you got.
True. I would say...
What are you going to do, go to the moon?
No, you can't. I mean, although that may be less of a funny statement here in, 20, 50 years, but for the time being, I look at it and I say, what is human nature? And I say, obviously, we respond to incentives. It's economics.
Yes.
And so if I want to get better governance, I have to design a system where better governance is incentivized.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, I would do that through pay, economic benefits, and the like. So what needs to happen? We need to incentivize self-reporting. We need to incentivize good behavior among police. We need to incentivize law. We need to, if we're going to create laws, we might as well create laws that are actually based on human behavior and not trying to restrain it, which is what the way it is now. And so if I want to incentivize, let's say, good police behavior, what am I going to do? I am going to tie tenure and pensions and pay to the minimum number of civil, essentially individuals complaints. If I'm going to do it at any other level, I'm going to do it. If I want fewer laws, I'm going to tie congressional pay to fewer laws being passed.
How about just cut taxes out? Zero. Zilch. None. $0. $0 coming in. So the only way they get money in is people like, the government did a good job this month. Here's $5.
However, we're never going to get a balanced budget amendment passed, and since the Federal Reserve controls funds, like right now we don't have enough money to fund what we have, and we still do it because the Federal Reserve can print and borrow and issue treasury auctions. So like even because Reagan cut taxes, and it still didn't do anything to stop the growth of government.
I just say cut taxes. Get rid of them.
Oh, yes.
Just get rid of it.
So in order to do that, how?
Huh? Yeah, that's the hard thing, is trying to get to that point. Like, the only way to get rid of the welfare system is to possibly go to a minimum income and then wean them all off the minimum income. So it's just like, you're going to get $20,000 a year, and then that's going to decrease every $1,000 for every year over your 18th birthday. It's the only way to really wean someone down off that, something like that.
Sure, or you could incentivize it where you get this basic minimum income for every citizen because you're a valued citizen of the state, and then we're going to give you a multiplier for every dollar that you make over, up to a point. And so you create an incentive at the low end. Instead of the incentive being to take that free money and not work, in order to have to get it, you have to be employed for 30 hours a week. even if it's for a civil job, even if it's for picking up trash, in order to receive a basic citizen's income, you have got to either work through a civilian corps or you have to have a job in the private market.
But what about those people that can't work?
They get the $20,000.
And that's all they get.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Like, but what about the people who just don't want us? So you got someone just to collect, like, whatever. Four of us live in an apartment with $20,000. We're in a one-bedroom apartment. We sit there and we just play video games the day. And our checks just keeps coming.
Sure.
So just, you eventually got to wean those people off.
And that wean is inflation.
Got a point about that. So it just stays at $20,000.
It never changes. It's not no cola.
Ooh. That might work. Just let inflation take care of them.
It always does. That's what they do for their debt.
All right, well, now that we've solved the world's problems, let's wrap up this.
I like that one.
We're almost to 2 hours. Can you believe it?
That's wild.
This episode's flown by. Really? Especially for Harry, since he's drunk.
Whoa, 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 whoa. It's going to take a lot more whiskey to get that's lazy.
All right, let's wrap up. Let's start with Harry. So let's talk about the things that we missed in the show that you feel like we're not addressed, but you came here and you said to yourself, if I say one thing, I want the listeners to know this. What is that, Harry?
Well, I got to say this because, Maya would be upset. When Eric Gardner did die, he didn't have cigarettes on him.
Really?
He didn't have any on him.
I did not know that.
He didn't have any cigarettes on the man.
Well, that's because he had sold them, right? Because he's one of those criminals.
Oh, man. That's what we know. But, like, the other thing is when it comes to, like, if the police are going to have body cameras and they're going to record all of us, then we should be allowed to not only be able to get that footage from them freely, easily, but also if they are coming upon us and recording us, if we wish to not to be recorded, we should tell them to turn that off. We should be allowed to tell them, I don't feel comfortable with that on.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Exactly. But having the more you be more serviceable to us, it's a step in the right direction.
You know, I don't think we really talked about the racial aspect of this.
The racial aspect's only there is because liberals who are MSNBC and all those alike that are viewing this is the only lens they can focus on, because the other lens is the truth is that their terrible laws that they want to put in place to enforce people's behavior cause this man's death.
So
they don't want people to smoke, so they made a smoke tax because it's a vice, because they didn't want people to smoke, and that caused that man's death.
So do you feel that there is institutionalized racism, then that does that play a factor in it, or you don't think that race played a factor in this at all?
Not Gardner's.
Okay.
Possibly Michael Brown's, from all the different KKK alliances they've been finding down in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
That possibly is race. Probably some institutional racism going on there, but in Eric Gardner's case, no, that's just good old-fashioned status. People,
right.
That's it.
Okay. I feel like if we didn't ask that part, you know, we have Harry, who's an expert in being a black man, with us today, and we didn't ask the one question.
Senior black correspondent.
The senior black correspondent of the We Are Libertarians world. Let's go to Deputy Black Correspondent Greg Lenz.
Well, Chief Diversity Officer is what I prefer.
Right. Just because you're swarthy.
Native American, bro.
You have that look of where you're not necessarily white. You're from out of town, but we can't quite nail
you. You can't place me.
Right.
You know.
Everywhere accent.
Looking at these two cases, there's a... Even if you're a supporter of the law, a supporter of the police officer, what you're really not even looking at is that by supporting the individuals and their actions in these cases is that you support the supremacy of the state in its right to grant you your life. Because if it can take it from you, then you're necessarily granting their right that you don't have the right to live unless they give it to you. And I don't think that's what this country was founded upon. We were endowed by our creator by certain inalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We were not granted those rights by government. And if you support Officer Wilson and you support Officer Palanteo, then you're essentially saying, I only exist because the government allows me. And you're still wrong. Unless you're a statist, and if you're a hardcore Republican conservative that respects cops, you still are saying that I support progressivism and the welfare state and I don't have a right to protect myself and exist naturally.
It is the fundamental right of, it is the first fundamental question of libertarianism. Do you own your own body?
Those that support these officers do not.
Right. Yep. For me, I think the racial aspect of it is a distraction. It is easy to get people who look differently to argue. There's definitely a different... There's definitely a cultural divide that has been created by over many different generations. And that continues because there are elements on either side that want to exploit that to keep us distracted from what truly is the problem, which is a growing government that increasingly wants to enforce, use force to get us to change our behavior towards the way the government wants. And for me, I think it is hugely important for us to resist the urge to worship government when it asks us to, and to think about these things differently. You know, does racism play a part in policing, racial profiling, institutionalized racism? I'm sure that it does on some levels. I'm just not educated enough or smart enough to tell you where or how or give you specific examples.
But possibly, but with people like decrying you're a racist, stuff like that, it's driving all those racists underground, mm-hmm. and you will never find them.
Right. You know, if Wilson was a racist, we don't know.
We will never know.
Right.
And regardless, to say he's racist, to say he's not racist, that misses the entire point of
exactly.
that he was in the wrong because no cop should be able to take your life.
Exactly.
And what it
doesn't make him in the right, doesn't make him in the wrong, or anything it does, or make anyone's their thoughts wrong just because they are racist, unless they're racist thoughts.
Yeah,
I read H.P. Lovecraft books. Yep. He was racist.
I'll take your word for it. Who's H.P. Lovecraft? Sounds like one of those characters from SNL, with like
Zulu,
the Tim
Batagan, Dago.
No, nothing.
That's racist against Italians. Dago.
Dagon.
Oh, Dagon.
All right.
Dagon.
Well, let me wrap it up because I think this is where I was definitely heading.
Bring out the Necronomicon here in a second.
If you go to our Facebook page on Thursday, what day was Thursday? The December the 3rd-ish. You'll see a meme
4th.
That we posted of the final words of Eric Garner. And, you know, just to read these, and then I'll read a passage from a Reason article that I just fell in love with this week because I think it illustrates my feelings on everything very well. The final words of Eric Garner were, "Every time you see me, you want to mess with me. I'm tired of it. It stops today." Then goes by, and then he goes back to, "I'm minding my business, officer. I'm minding my business. Please just leave me alone. I told you the last time. Please just leave me alone. Please, please. Don't touch me. Don't touch me. I can't breathe. I can't breathe." And then he repeats that till finally he passes out and away eventually. And Jesse Walker of Reason, and I really think people should look this up because I think it's very, very poignant. "That's the statement of a man who was being choked figuratively long before he was being choked literally. He is asserting his dignity, and then he's being killed for it. Eric Garner died because he decided to demand what should be the first right of any human being in a decent society, the right to live... the right to peacefully live your life without being molested." And I read that and it hit me how far we've come from our founder's vision. And it is funny that so many of the people in our society who spend so much of their time talking about our government returning to the true vision of what our founders thought this country ought to be, they spend so much of their time defending these agents of the state that are molesting, not in the sense that, "And dear sweet baby Jesus, please let the person that when we posted that meme ask, they molested him?" No. They were messing with him. And if you really look at where the founders were at and where we're at, we're now getting very close to losing what our founders established.
If they would have wanted a large centralized government, they would have designed one.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And instead, we have agents of the state taking away our rights, not treating us with dignity. And when you're trying to establish your dignity, you end up getting killed for it. Not everybody. Not going to happen if you get stuck at a traffic light, but it could. Mm-hmm. And you know what? What's going to happen to the officer that kills you? You know, it's this is the trend, not the rule, but this is the trend that is starting to emerge, and that's what's troubling. So, another episode of We're Libertarians is in the books. It was very uplifting. I don't know why you people like this show so much, because it makes me sad after I'm done with it.
I know most people tune in to hear you eat Reese's Pieces.
Yeah.
Or, exactly. Sorry, Reese's Pumpkins.
The Reese's Pumpkins.
But we're glad you listened. You know, you could be listening to any other podcast in the world, but yeah. You listen to this one. Thank you.
Screw that Joe Rogan podcast. Don't listen to that. That seems to be the podcast that, like, everybody says. I've only listened to, like, half of one episode. I listened to Joel Salatin, who's a farmer. Who was on Food Inc. I listened to that podcast. It seemed pretty good, pretty in-depth. Rogan had a lot of good questions, but so maybe check that out. I don't like it too much, because then he might stop listening to us.
Yeah.
So he's like a professional at talking and stuff. So, all right, thanks for listening to We Are Libertarians. We appreciate it, and as always, we promise
to do better next time.
Music for We Are Libertarians is provided by Hoosier musician Brian Keith Wallen. Please check out his website, briankeithwallen.com. The song is Bad Spell.